Well, welcome once again to ArtCast. You know, I'm trying to think. I've fallen into a rut. I say the same thing every day when I start ArtCast. I gotta change. I'm just getting... Oh, well. Hey, this is your host, Ron Jacobs. And today, we're talking to Mark Durso, who is one of the software developers on MSDN. Now, you talk about a project. Man, imagine this big mass of information, this website with global scale, and how do you make that work? Well, you're going to hear some interesting thoughts from Mark on how they're taking advantage of some of the new features of ASP.NET 2.0 to really do some clever, clever stuff. I think you'll enjoy it. So let's listen up to Mark Durso. And back again with Mark Durso at... can I say your name right
there? Yes, you did.
Okay, because I just heard you say it. So, you know, that would be a good thing. But we are here at VS Live San Francisco, where, Mark, you are one of the speakers here. What are you speaking about?
We're going to tell a story about how MSDN has been using Visual Studio .NET and ASP.NET 2.0 to enable some new features for our site. So MSDN 2, I'm not sure if you've seen or are aware of the MSDN 2 website at msdn2.microsoft.com. We are migrating existing content in our current library over to this new site. Some of the new features of this site that are, I think, very compelling is the fact that our URL address, you can actually enter queries into there. So if you know the type library or the class name of what you're looking for, like system.xml, you can actually just type in system.xml, and we'll take you to the page, you know, the main class page for system.xml. And it works for all the types and methods and properties in the frameworks.
Okay, let me back up for a second, though. So you are one of the guys who builds the MSDN site.
Yes.
Okay. And you've been doing this MSDN 2 site, which actually, I think I remember about a beta site, but is that different than this one?
It's slightly different. It is the same site, the same URL, but what the difference is, now we're migrating more content into it. So now, I'm not sure if it's out yet, but very shortly we're going to have it, the same content in 9 different languages. And originally the content was limited to the WIDBI docs, the Visual Studio 2005 docs.
Okay.
Now we're migrating the legacy content forward into this site. So legacy content being stuff that was already in the current library.
Ah, okay, gotcha. All right, so now when you were talking about this query thing, I got a little confused there because you said the URL. So are you talking about like I could put in the query string right on the URL?
Actually, you don't even need to put it in a query string. It is the URL. And that's what I'm here to talk about, is how to do that. It's actually, there's a class inside of ASP.NET called the Virtual Path Provider. Uh-huh. And you inherit from that class and override a few methods, and you can take control of the entire URL. Because what it does is it allows you to participate in ASP.NET's resource lookup. So instead of normally, ASP.NET might look for the actual file named system.xml, but mm-hmm. if there isn't one, it might, you know, serve back a 404. In our case, we can intercept that and return our own class or have our own custom logic happen there, so we can respond to all those different URLs.
Whoa. Okay, so I would go to msdn2.microsoft.com/system.xml, and
yeah.
then it would. Wow, that's pretty cool.
Right, and so some of the other things you can do, we have some parameters that you can append to it. So we have language, locale, also version. So right now the only version out there is the latest version, but as we move more content in there, like the Visual Studio previous 2003, whatever it was called before, mm-hmm. That documentation can also be accessed. So if you type in system.xml, you're going to get the latest version of the 2.0 version. But if you want to see the 1.1 or the 1.0 version, you can also do that by appending the right version number on there.
So that's real interesting. Now, because, you know, a lot of times when I want a special URL on for some of our projects, we went through all kinds of hoops too. When I was in Patterns and Practices, we did, a guide called Improving .NET Application Performance and Scalability. Really terrific guide, and we wanted to make it very simple, so like I could just say what the URL is, and I wanted, you know, instead of something that's like 100 characters
right.
long, I wanted to be able to say, just go to microsoft.com slash ScaleNet.
Right.
And you're there, right? And so we had to go through a lot of hoops to get that, you know, and get it all set up. But we got it set up. But it sounds like with something like this, you could do all kinds of really cool, you know, everybody could get their own little favorite URL very
That's
easily.
Right. Yeah, and you can map, since you have control over where that request maps to, you can have that information stored in a database, you can have it on the file system, you can do whatever you want, and that's the power of it. And it's not very widely known what this class is for. The documentation, when you read it, says what it does, but the implications aren't really there. And so we use it just in particular to take over the URL space.
Hmm.
And so that's one thing that we're going to talk about.
That's very cool. And did you bring like some sample code and
yeah.
that sort of thing?
Huh? Yeah, so one of the samples I have is actually, there was, I think in the 60s, there was a program written to emulate a psychologist. And somebody entered into the Turing contest. It didn't, you know, I don't think it did very well. But, you know, it basically you ask it a question and it responds. So one of the demos I have is you can type in anything into the URL bar in your browser, and my application will ask this bot that question, and you'll see what the virtual shrink will say. And the point of that demo is to really show that you can take full control. It doesn't really matter what you type in the URL.
But okay, but the first part has to be your site, though, right?
It has to be your domain name, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You have to be able to respond.
Okay, so you go msdn2.microsoft.com/what-is-the-meaning-of-life.
Yes.
And then it
exactly.
something, right? Okay, well, that's kind of interesting. Well, you know, I wonder, are many people using that? Do people even know you can do that?
I don't think so. I don't think there are very many people. I've done some, you know, checking around, and what I found, there are a few blog entries about it. Some people have mapped their URLs to some items in a database, but I don't think many people understand how much control you can have over your URLs using it. It's pretty nice.
Well, you know, I guess probably a lot of people haven't thought about what they would do if they did have control.
Well, one of the reasons why we did this was to make sure that our URLs are permanent. So one of the problems we've had at Microsoft is, you know, we have new content comes out and it supersedes some previous content, and we need to archive the old content. So how do we maintain that going forward? Well, typically we move the old content to some archive, and that means changing the URL. So now somebody who is linked to that page, either that page now points to different content that's newer, or maybe even that URL breaks. So the reason why we did this, in fact, is to make sure that all our links are permanent. And it doesn't actually have to do with the vroot or the location on disk at all. It's just really the query into our system.
Yeah, so that is a very powerful concept, because that is a constant problem on the web. You know, like, I was searching around for something the other day, and I finally found a page where somebody's like, oh, I've got that thing, you know, and I click, and then it goes to some other site, 404,
yeah.
You know, and I'm going, oh, you know, it's gone.
It's especially frustrating when it's on a Microsoft site, I think, which, you know, our site in particular is like the source of truth for some of the documentation. And if you can't find it there, it is very frustrating.
It's very depressing.
Yeah.
My source of truth is broken. I just
right.
can't believe it. Yeah. Well, you know, this reminds me of another RCast episode. I talked with a guy who wrote an article for the Microsoft Architecture Journal about something that's called topic maps.
Yeah.
And I had never heard of topic maps before, but it sounds like a very, very cool concept, because a topic map is basically, rather than kind of searching on keywords, you search on concepts. And that way, if a concept is known by multiple names, then it's okay, because, you know, you can find it from any of the names or from the concept side, and concepts link well to other concepts that are related and so forth. And it seems like this might be a very good use of that, because if you put on the URL something that represented, you know, say system.xml, is a concrete thing, but it could also link to a concept. Like, maybe you care right. about XML serialization. Maybe you care about DOM. A whole bunch of things that are related kind of stuff. So, because
right.
keyword searches have become increasingly frustrating as the body of content grows. It's just, a nightmare.
Right. So actually, one of the things we're working on for vNext is to be able to ask for things by kind. So if you take a look at the MSDN2 site, actually, there's a tree control. And it's actually the out-of-the-box ASP.NET 2.0 tree control. That tree control actually represents a taxonomy in our site. So, and that taxonomy has been defined by Visual Studio or whichever product group. Now, what we can do, since we've shredded that data out into a database, is we can repurpose the metadata about each one of those nodes. So we actually know which documents are about C# and which ones are about C# and XML or SQL and SQL, right? So we have that metadata available to us. And so one of the things that I would like to do in the next release is be able to, so we're going to have a web service, it may be out already, that allows you to programmatically access this data. I would like to be able to expose the ability to request things by kind. I would like to see the latest C# documentation on system.xml. I would like to see the latest code example on how to use this method. And those are the kinds of things I would really like to bring forward. It may not be as elegant as the topic maps, but it is something that we can do in the short term.
Yeah, well, and the whole topic map thing sprang out of the idea of indexing across multiple volumes of books. And so when you think about it from that perspective, indexes are really cool, right? I mean, like if I go to a big fat book and I'm like, I just want to know about XML serialization, I'm going to go to the index, you know, and try to find where it might be mentioned, and I'll get a few listings, and then I can narrow down my search a great deal. And I guess, you know, we never imagined when the web first started that our big problem would be too many things to read.
Right. Well, we don't keep an index per se, but what we can do is map queries into our system. So if you were to think of our URL space as sort of a RESTian web service that accepts a URL post or a GET and can then return a response of data. Actually, the data that we return, actually when you type in a URL, is valid XHTML, so you can load it right straight into some sort of XML serializer or deserializer and parse it and get some types out and do interesting things with it. We're also going to add the SOAP interface on that very soon. But I guess, you know, with the index, one of the things that we want to do is allow people to do a search and be able to scope down their search and find things that are related to a particular topic. And we don't actually use the index. We use our metadata as a filter and as an extra keyword on an existing index, say an MSN search index, that sort of thing. But we don't have an index of that data ourselves. One of the other things that we've been looking at is a site like Technorati. Technorati, I find to be very interesting because it's basically an evolving user-based taxonomy, right? So when, you know, a new term comes out, it makes it into the index. It makes it into the lexicon. New articles start using these terms. I would like for our taxonomy to move forward. Right now, we get our taxonomy from whoever's writing the articles. I would like for people to be able to tag our content and be able to move it forward so that when we have a new concept, like Ajax is an example. Ajax is a wrapper for a bunch of existing technologies, and now there's going to be some object model representation of it being exposed in ASP.NET through Atlas. But it would be interesting if some of the key technologies underlying that, when you search for Ajax, if those things would come up as well, instead of having to have been an article that was written specifically about Ajax.
That would be huge. And you know, because, yeah, you could think about, you know, a lot of JavaScript stuff that's been in the library forever. That probably totally relates.
Right.
And the problem we have now is that somebody has to, you know, put on their editor hat and go back and hunt those articles up and, you know, try to tag them with appropriate keywords and that sort of
exactly.
stuff. Exactly. How would you make it so that, though, you could say, hey, there's this new tag, Ajax, and we need to link in these existing things that relate to it?
No, that's one of the things we're working on. So one of the benefits of putting our entire system, our back end, inside a SQL database is that we can do internal queries and find out what we have, so we can know exactly what we have. And because we also take control of the entire URL space, we can also know the kinds of things people are looking for. So if we see a mismatch or sort of an impedance mismatch between what people are looking for and what we have, we could then update the taxonomy, or we can then draw some extra linkage that is missing.
See, you know what, I think that concept plays very well with the topic maps, because you could say, well, here's a concept of JavaScript as a concept, right? There's a lot of related concept, related articles that fall under this concept of JavaScript reference materials and how-to docs and all that. So that's one concept that existed in the past.
Right.
Now there's a new concept, AJAX, that comes out. Now there's a little bit of editor work. Somebody has to put on their hat, but it's a much smaller surface area.
Right.
So they relate AJAX to the concepts that directly relate to it. So they look JavaScript. Oh, well, it relates that concept. Now, anything, some really old article that was written about JavaScript long before anybody used the term AJAX is now linked to the tag AJAX.
That's
because
right.
of the topic map.
Right, exactly. And so that would be the kind of thing I'd like to move forward in the future. And so we're doing some investigatory work right now and trying to figure out what it takes to make that possible. But we have the infrastructure there. We have the data in our store. So hopefully we'll get there.
You know what else I think would be really interesting to do with MSDN is to have a way, I'm sure it's probably possible, I just haven't thought through it enough, maybe with some combination of RSS and web service calls or whatever, where people could act like a virtual editor over this very large library.
Yep.
And they could have, like, you know, Ron's MSDN, right?
Yep.
So where I pick out the pieces of MSDN that I like a lot, and I can kind of compile my own subset of the larger library and say, that's my MSDN.
That would be really cool, and I think we are thinking about doing that, actually. So one of the key pieces of that is being able to store per-user data. Now, we do allow some personalization to happen right now. We have a beta out of a personalized homepage that is just on the fringes, but the key piece of that is that we have anonymous information. So when you come, if you've registered with Microsoft.com, we can then identify you in particular, not who you are, but that you've been to our site and that we recognize you. And what we could do is basically allow that nugget, that ID, to be the host for information like what you're interested in, the kinds of stuff that you've looked at previously. And we could aggregate sort of a mini personalized dev center of all the technologies that you're interested in. Another thing that we're thinking about doing is taking technologies that right now don't have a lot of editorial staff behind them, but that people are very interested in, and sort of creating automated dev centers where we know these are the pieces of content that people are looking for by understanding our traffic. We also know that this content is very important to people, but nobody's editorializing it. We don't have somebody like Kent Sharkey or Duncan McKenzie going through and making sure that this stuff gets surfaced. So we can do that sort of programmatically now with the metadata that we have in our system.
You know, that would be awesome, because, I mean, the number one complaint, right? You hear it every time. You go, well, I search for something, I can't find what I want, you know?
Right.
And that's just like endless that we're there. But
I think that's really a twofold problem.
Yeah.
One is understanding what you wanted, and then the other thing is hopefully we have the content that was relevant to you. You know, while I was working on the MSDN2 stuff, it was during beta of Visual Studio 2005. We were dogfooding it as an early release to see how it worked, and it worked great. But one of the things was there was very little documentation, and there's still scanty documentation, especially on the virtual path provider. And I found myself looking at a lot of blogs, internal blogs, external blogs, and there was great information on these blogs. And there was code samples, and I would really like to be able to link that to our content somehow, so that you get to the virtual path provider documentation page, and it tells you what it is, gives you high level, right, because that's what the product group provided, but there's not really a code sample, or the code sample doesn't meet what you're looking for. It'd be nice if we could say, you know what, we know that you want virtual path provider, and we know that on 15 seconds or, you know, another site, there's this great article that also expands it a little bit more, and here's a link to it.
Yeah, that would be huge. I mean, because, you know, you went and did the hard work to figure this out, and you read the blogs, and you found the sites, and got the information. But the next guy has got to repeat that all over
again.
That's
right. Yeah, and so it'd also be nice if we could take that per user store, if we do have such a thing, to be able to sort of aggregate that for you. And so what we could do, if we had a big enough store per user, is create sort of a virtual workspace for you that has, you know, stuff you've seen, stuff that you're interested in, and allows you to have quick access to, you know, your favorite code snippets. Maybe allows you to share this with other users that you're interested in, or that may be interested in your work.
Yeah, that would be cool. Like, you could publish your things to your buddy list or
right.
something, and or maybe even publicly and say, you know, oh, when I was searching for virtual path provider, I found this cool blog.
Exactly.
And so we could go, okay, at least that's what that guy thought was interesting.
Right. Another thing that might be interesting is sort of like a developer wiki, where we could actually allow people to post their code samples. And this is the code sample I found really useful that I developed in my investigation, let's say. And then you go to the site and you could just add it in there and other people could see it directly.
You know, that would be cool. The thing that I'm sure that there's a lot of people who inside Microsoft kind of shudder when we talk like that, because they go, well, you know, code samples, all those have to go through security reviews. And,
right.
you know, and if it appears on an official Microsoft site, then people go, well, it must be Microsoft
right.
saying that and blah. You know,
so there are legal issues, right? MSDN is the source of truth on all this documentation. And if we link to some code sample, what does that mean? Are we saying that this is the best code sample? I think we can figure out a way to make that work, right? So maybe it means that we don't host it directly on MSDN. Maybe it means that this functionality, which uses our data behind the scenes, is actually on another site. It's run by another company, that sort of thing. So it doesn't necessarily have the stamp of this is official Microsoft documentation. And I think, too, users are very savvy, and they understand that they're viewing a code sample written by another user. And right. I don't think we'll run into too many problems. At least I hope not.
Okay. Well, we can always do that trick where they launch it in a frame, and we have the little banner at the top saying, we didn't do this, you know,
right.
we apologize if it's something really nasty or whatever.
Right, exactly. We may have to do that, something similar.
Okay. Well, so this virtual path provider sounds really fascinating. Now, when you were learning this, was there anything that you kind of went like, whoa, that just blew me away. I'm totally surprised by that.
Yeah, the main thing about it is that, so there's like two methods that you need to override. One is get file. And when a request comes in for default.aspx, this method gets called and says, you know, get this page off of disk or wherever it is that you think it is, get default.aspx. And when what you can do there is return a virtual file, which is another class that you override. And what you're doing is you're just basically outputting a string into a memory stream that says, here's a page declaration. Quite literally, it's the at, you know, page equals and class, and you're just basically writing this out. What's fascinating about that is ASP.NET picks it up, and your code gets run, and then it's all pre-compile, so pre-compile time. So you get to participate in the full ASP.NET code optimization and compilation that you would normally get to participate in. So I found that to be very interesting, and to be able to participate in that. So to contrast that with, say, writing an HTTP module or an HTTP handler, where you would have to basically take over the entire request, and you might, in order to get your content back in, and you would have to stream it back in yourself, or with an HTTP handler, you would have to take over the whole pipeline, and you'd be responsible for writing that stuff. With the virtual path provider, you're still very tightly integrated in with ASP.NET's response pipeline, and you don't have to make sure that your code is optimized or compiled.
So, I keep thinking, wow, this sounds really fascinating, but I'm not sure why I would use it.
You would use it if you wanted to map your request for a file to a database. If you wanted to have, say, one of the things we use it for is if you've requested a page that we don't have, what we can do is then return a 404 page and with a status set to 404, an HTTP status set in the header to 404, as opposed to using a redirect to a 404 page or a response.redirect or that sort of thing. So there is that practical application. You know, and one of the things is ASP.NET does expose a nice redirect functionality, but they put in their server.transfer and response.redirect as sort of, well, not sort of, as a, you know, a compatibility layer with old ASP code. And one of the impacts of that is when you do a redirect, you have two choices. If you use that function, you can either allow the current page to execute, or you can terminate the page. If you terminate the page, you get a thread abort exception, which you have to swallow unless you want to, you know, not have a good experience. Or if you allow the page to continue, then you have the full processing weight of that page, and then you have the processing weight of the next page that you redirected your user to. With the virtual path provider, you can just return a 302, and you can control exactly what code gets executed. And really, the only thing you need to do is set the header to 302, and the status, and then the location to wherever it is you want to go.
And for those who are not truly geeks, what is 302?
Oh, 302, I'm sorry. That's an object moved. That's saying that it's a temporary move.
Oh, okay. You are a serious web geek, man. You've probably got all those codes memorized.
I know nothing.
Okay, so, all right, so I'm just imagining that lookup in a database, because I've seen sites where, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the database, and then they'll have some kind of process that will extract stuff out of the database into XML files, or maybe they'll pre-generate HTML files or whatever on a regular basis, so the file is sitting there that when the request comes, you got the file to serve up.
Right.
And so with this kind of method, you could skip all of that. When the request comes in,
you could check for the file if it's there, or you could just go to the SQL server. The other thing you could do is you can make those two calls asynchronous, so that when you do your call to SQL server, or if you go get the file and it's there, but maybe you have a timestamp on it that says, you know, this is how fresh it is, this is how long it should stay around, you could then say, oh, I'm within 10% of time. So if it's an hour from now, for example, that this thing is going to expire, you could say, you know, that's pretty close, I'm going to go ahead and do an asynchronous update. And so with the virtual path provider, you get a nice hook in to be able to do that. Another thing you can do is, since you're in the regular ASP.NET pipeline, you can just go ahead and cache that page. You can be output cached. You can do, you know, all the normal stuff you'd want to do.
Yeah, so that has a lot of distinct advantages.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so... any other big surprises from this thing?
You know, one of the things that that we spent some time with are master pages. Master pages are very cool. And when you combine it with the virtual path provider, what you get... So with a virtual path provider, you don't actually have any pages necessarily. You don't have to have any physical pages on disk. And one of the things that we found is hard for site managers or, you know, HTML folks to understand, what is my page going to look like when it gets rendered? It's sort of all virtual. Well, if we have a master page, say masterpage.master, in there are HTML tags, and embedded in there are server control tags that say, I'm going to put a Microsoft.com banner control here, I'm going to put a content control here, and it's very... easy to look at the HTML and understand this is what this page is going to look like. As a matter of fact, I want to switch the order of these controls. You can just do it in the master page. When the request comes in, we instantiate our page type depending on that key, which is the URL. And if it's going to be a regular page, we might say, go ahead and load that master page, and then all those controls fire, and then pull content into it.
Oh, okay. Well... this is mind-bending. I mean, it really is, because it causes you to think about the processing of a web request in a very different way, different potential. So thanks a lot for taking the time to stop by today.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
Mark Dusso, ladies and gentlemen, and the Virtual Path Provider. Pretty cool stuff, eh? That really causes you to think just about all kinds of possibilities. Who knows where people will take this, huh? Well, anyway, I want to give a shout-out to Keith down in Australia, who said, just a quick email to say thanks for all your hard work you always mention on your pod and webcast to drop you a line. And since I listen to and get a lot out of heaps of them, I really should. Well, thanks, Keith. He says, he goes on to say, it gives me great coverage of what's out there and what others are doing and thinking about. It's broadened my horizons and makes me think more critically about my design and code. And that's why we're here on ArtCast.